Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 11, entitled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. We're reading from text 26 all the way to 48. So I read the verses. I'm going to read just a translation, skip the Sanskrit, from 26 to 47, and then we'll read that one together. Text number 26. Translation. Thereafter, Indra released himself from the cage. Thereafter, Indra released himself from the cage of the network of arrows, appearing with his chariot, flag, horses, and chariot driver, and thus pleasing the sky, the earth, and all directions. He shone effulgently like the sun at the end of the night. Indra was bright and beautiful in the vision of everyone. Oh, come on. I'm doing a class right now, so can I call you back? Thank you. Jeez. Sorry. Text number 27, translation. When Indra, who is known as Brajadhara, the carrier of the thunderbolt, saw his own soldiers so oppressed by the enemies on the battlefield, he became very angry. Thus he took up his thunderbolt to kill the enemies. Text number 28. Translation. O King Parikshit, King Indra used his thunderbolt to cut off the head of both Bala and Paka in the presence of all their relatives and followers. In this way he created a very fearful atmosphere on the battlefield. Text number 29, translation. O King, when Namuchi, another demon, saw the killing of both Bala and Paka, he was full of grief and lamentation. Thus, he angrily made a great attempt to kill Indra. Text number 30, translation. Being angry and roaring like a lion, the demon Namuchi took up a steel spear which was bound with the bells, with bells, and decorated with ornaments of gold. He loudly cried, "Now you are killed." Thus coming before Indra to kill him, Namuchi released his weapon. Text number 31. Translation. O King, when Indra, King of Heaven, saw this very powerful spear falling towards the ground like a blazing meteor, he immediately cut it to pieces with his arrows. Then, being very angry, he struck Namuchi's shoulder with his thunderbolt to cut off Namuchi's head. Text number 32, translation. Although King Indra hurled his thunderbolt at Namuchi with great force, it could not even pierce his skin. It is very wonderful that the famed thunderbolt that had pierced the body of Vitrasura could not even slightly injure the skin of Namuchi's neck. Wow. Namuchi. Text number 33, translation. When Indra saw the thunderbolt return from the enemy, he was very much afraid. He began to wonder whether this had happened because of some miraculous superior power. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Indra's thunderbolt is invisible, And therefore, when Indra saw that he had returned without doing any injury to Namuchi, he was certainly very much afraid. Text number 34, translation. Indra thought, formerly, when many mountains flying in the sky with winds will fall to the ground and kill people, I cut the winds with the same thunderbolt. Text number 35, translation. Vitrasura was the essence of the austerities undergone by Tvastha, yet the thunderbolt killed him. Indeed, not only he, but also many other Stavo heroes, whose very skin could not be injured even by all kinds of weapons, were killed by the same thunderbolt. Text 36. But now, although the same thunderbolt has been released against a less important demon, it has been ineffectual. Therefore, although it was as good as Brahmastra, it has now become useless like an ordinary rod. I should therefore hold it no longer. Text 37. Sukadeva Goswami continued, while the morose Indra was lamenting in this way, an ominous, unembodied voice said from the sky, "This demon Namuchi is not to be annihilated by anything dry or moist." Text number 38. The voice also say, "O Indra, because I have given this demon the benediction that he will never be killed by any weapon that is dry or moist, you have to think of another way to kill him." Text 39. After hearing the ominous. After hearing the ominous voice, Indra, with great attention, began to meditate on how to kill the demon. He then saw that foam will be the means, for it is neither moist nor dry. Text 40. Thus Indra, king of heaven, severed Namuchi's head with a weapon of foam, which was neither dried nor moist. Then all the sages satisfied Indra, the exalted personality, by showering flowers and garlands upon him, almost covering him. Purport. In this regard, the Shruti mantra say, Apan Fenema Namuche Sira Indrodharaya. Indra killed Namuchi with watery foam, which is neither moist nor dry. Text 41. Translation. Vishrasu and Paravasu, the two chiefs of Gandharva, of the Gandharvas, sung in great happiness. The kettle drums of the demigods sounded, and the apsaras danced in jubilation. Text 42. Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other demigods began killing the demons who opposed them, just as lions kill deer in the forest. Text 43. O King, when Lord Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation of the demons, he sent a message with Narada, who went before the demigods to make them stop fighting. Text 44. The great sage Narada say, "All of you demigods are protected by the arms of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by His grace you have gotten the nectar. By the grace of the Goddess of Fortune, you are glorious in every way. Therefore, please stop fighting. Text 45. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, accepting the words of Narada, the demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Being praised by their followers, they returned to their heavenly planets. Text 46. Following the order of Narada Muni, whatever demons remained on the battlefield took Bali Maharaj, who was in a precarious condition, to the hill known as Astagiri. Text 47. There, on the hill, on that hill, Sruka Acharya brought to life all the dead demoniac soldiers who had not lost their heads, trunks, and limbs. He achieved this by his own mantra known as Sanjivani, or Sanjivani, Sanjivani. And now text 48. Balischoshanashaprishta Pratyapanendriya smriti Parajito pinakidyal Lokatattva vichakshana Balischoshanasasprista Pratyapanendriya smriti Parajito pinakidyal Lokatattva vichakshana Balischoshanasasprista Pratyapanendriya smriti Parajito pinakidyal Lokatattva vichakshana. Please chant. Balihi, Maharaj Bali, Cha, also, Usha Nasha, by Sukracharya, Spritaha, Bintoch, Pratyapana, was brought back, Indriya Smritihi, realization of the actions of the senses and memory, Parajita, he was defeated, Api, Odo, Na Akidyat, he did not lament, Lokatattva Vichakshanaha, because he was very experienced in universal affairs. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bali Maharaj was very experienced in universal affairs when he regained his senses and memory by the grace of Sukracharya. He could understand everything that had happened. Therefore, although he has been defeated, he did not lament. Purport. It is significant that Bali Maharaj is here said to be very experienced. Although defeated, he was not at all sorry, for he knew that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since he was a devotee, he accepted his defeat without lamentation, as stated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita 2:47, Karma Deva Adhikaraste Ma Paleshu Kadachanam. Everyone in Krishna consciousness should execute his duty without regard for victory or defeat. One must execute his duty as ordered by Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. In first-class devotional service, one always abides by the orders of the will and will of Krishna. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the 8th canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine Bancha Kalpa Taruvyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So things that we can remember are this amazing narration that immediately comes to mind is how to imagine a weapon of foam, or the foam weapon, and how can the foam weapon kill such a powerful demon. So it takes some understanding of universal affairs to be able to figure that one out. If I, ask kill a demon with a foam weapon, you probably grab, something to shave it and just throw it very hard at the head or something. So, Namuchi have this benediction that he cannot be killed neither by something dry or something wet. So, he figures, foam is not wet. So when you put it in your face, the foam is neither wet nor dry. It doesn't whoosh like this, but it doesn't feel dry either, So that's how he was killed. There's no details of how it happened, but he was killed in that way. Another detail that struck me is that although the demigods, they were so absorbed in their purpose to eliminate the enemies, And they were massacring the demons after they killed the big generals of the demons, Lord Indra. And then the lesser demons were being completely annihilated by the other demigods. And Lord Brahma, observing the whole situation, he was, you know, very unhappy. Although one may say, oh, they're demons, you know, they just cause trouble, so just finish them, like that. But the natural condition of devotees is that they're compassion. Why unnecessarily killing lesser demons? So he sent that to stop, and you see the character of the demigods, because they're devotees. They're devotees who are mixed, that is explained. The demigods have mixed desires or material desires. However, we cannot understand them to be just like anyone. Most of us, we have also mixed desires, devotion and like that. But these are very elevated personalities. Very, very, very elevated personality. The fact that he always shows in the character, because you're in the middle, imagine yourself in the middle of a battlefield, and obviously you feel great enmity that there was no remorse on being slaughtered all these people, all these demons. But as soon as they received the order, the message from Narada Muni, oh, okay, Hare Krishna. And they became peaceful. Just like that. That's what is narrated. So, that shows, you know, their character. That at the end, they're very controlled. And very much, they're not fully governed by their emotions and their feelings and, you know, their minds and their senses and all these, you know, conceptions that one may have. You know, in general, when our capacity to control our mind and senses is immature, we're being victimized by the things. And then we go through so many, you know, upside downs just by being victimized by the mind, like Krishna explained. For those who have no control on the senses and also being pulled by attachments, the mind is the worst of enemies. It's your worst enemy. The mind can be one's best friend or one's worst enemy. So if one is, you know, if one is controlled by one's senses, then the mind is our worst enemy. And if we're able to control the senses and the pulls of desires, then the mind becomes the best friend. So the demigods are able to show that they control, but in the case of the Karma Mishra Bhaktas, that's how they describe Karma Mishra Bhaktas. Karma Mishra Bhaktas. So they have they're attached to perform their duties. Duties within this material world, and that's mixed with bhakti. The way neophyte devotees are described is prakrita bhakta, which is materialistic devotee. I think that clears the difference. I think now that I'm saying it, one is karma mishra bhakta. Bhakti means with attachment to perform duties. And the other one, that is the cases of many of us, is prakrita bhakta, that we have mixed materialistic desires with, you know, the devotional desires. The demigods, they have their desire is, they have a very attachment to the responsibility of controlling universal affairs, but they also have an attachment to their service to the personality of Godhead. So they have that responsibility and they have that mix. So it's not pure devotional service. And in this pastime, the one who shows at the end pure devotional service is Bali Maharaj. And Prabhupada described Bali Maharaj as a devotee. He said because he's a devotee, he's able to understand and being fully detached from the results of the battlefield. And one thing that also struck me is that it's wonderful that Maharaj Bali, what is that says, that you put your mouth where your money is, or you put your money where your mouth, how's it goes? Yes, you put the money where your mouth is, or you walk the talk, no? Or you talk the walk the talk. You walk the talk. So, Maharaj Bali, when he was rebuking Indra, he was saying, this fellow is so, see if I can shut up this thing. Sorry about that. Somehow or other, this never happened, but it happened today. Okay, should not disturb more. So he was rebuking Indra. He said, "You are a pandita. Just by the show by the things that you're telling me, is showing very clearly that you are a pandita, that you're not educated, knowledgeable of universal affairs. You're very inexperienced. You don't have a clue. You don't understand. It shows in the way you're speaking. Why is that? Because now that you have all that there comes Lord Vishnu and makes the whole thing very nice for you. Now you're thumping your, you know, chest and saying, you know, things, you know, like, you know, now I'm so elated because I'm, you know, it shows I'm victorious now. I got these guys down. They've been, Lord Vishnu already killed, you know, the whole big ones and demons, generals, and dispelled the whole illusion. And now everything is clear. Now we're on the top. So now you're saying I'm very, you know, encouraged and boasting about, you know, being victorious. And just by speaking like that, you simply are showing that you're not very expert and experienced in these universal affairs. Rather, you should understand, what is the understanding of a pandit? The understanding of a pandit is that happiness and distress, victory and defeat, is if you become affected by the things, then you are not very knowledgeable. You should take it equal poise, because you understand that this is the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can forget the personality of Godhead's hands on everything. If you do that, then you're a pandita. You don't have an understanding of how this world, this universe functions. Universal affairs, which is something very significant to understand. Because universal affairs, what does this mean? You Prabhupada uses in the translation, he translated that Maharaj Vali, he was expert and experienced in universal affairs. Therefore, he was able to understand. He was not distressed by being defeated by Indra and his whole army annihilated. He was not distressed about that. He was peaceful. Although he, you know, could understand that he was completely crushed. But he could understand that because he not only was able to say the principle, but he understood it in full. Because he was a devotee, Prabhupada said. He could understand that Krishna is the sanction of Krishna. Krishna was in control. So when the devotee understands Krishna is in control, then the devotee is very peaceful. Why? Because if he understands Krishna is in control, he understands that Krishna is looking after you. Krishna is Shruhidan Sarva Bhutanam. He is the best friend. So he, everything will be positive at the end. It's just what is required. So it's important to understand these universal affairs because we are citizens of the universe. We're citizens of the universe, and the universe has rules, has laws, like any type of a structure, you know, creation. So there is a structure, and then we have to understand it. If we don't understand the structure in which we live, then obviously we are going to be in trouble. We're not only going to cause trouble for others, but we're also going to cause great trouble to ourselves. And that is the predicament of the conditioned soul who are in ignorance. So the apandita that Bali Maharaj point out to Indra is the predicament of conditioned souls when we don't have an understanding of the universal affairs. Meaning that there's a structure. There are different departments. There are things that you have to do, there's things that you have to obey, the things that you have to follow, their laws, their rules. We have to know that. And that's simple common sense. If you're a citizen of a place, you have to understand the rules of that place. If you whimsically just make up your own rules, then you cause trouble to yourself and cause great trouble to others. And then what happens is that you end suffering the results of that, you know, trouble. So this is a very important principle. We have to know the laws, the codes of the laws of the Lord. And the laws of the Lord are explained as the codes of religion. The codes of religions that are made for men. Those are the things that we have to understand fully and follow it. But not only understand the codes of religion and follow it, because the demigods do that, but understand the creator of those codes, understand the purpose, understand, you know, who we are, and understand the hierarchy that is there in the universe and being able to, you know, function properly. So to get to that, one have to not only perform one's duty, religious duty, very carefully with that understanding, but also have a very clear understanding of who is the enjoyer and who is for whom that whatever performance of duty we do, for whom is, who is the benefactor of that. And that's part of Krishna's system. Krishna's system is sacrifice must be done for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or any type of karma work have to be done for his satisfaction. And when we forget that, then that's a pandita. And that's what Maharaj Bali was pointing out to Indra. You're forgetting. You're talking like an apandita. It's all you. No. It was Lord Vishnu. It's all about Lord Vishnu. So that's a very important theme that is going to be learn through this pastime, how Maharaj Bali showed through the whole narration, you know, how he understood very well this principle. As we go on, Shukracharya, by his power, again, you know, make Maharaj Bali so powerful that he was able to again take up the kingdom of heaven and knock down the demigods. But when Lord Vamana appeared to claim everything from Bali Maharaj, when Bali Maharaj got to understand that he is Lord Vishnu, he immediately surrendered everything. His mood was, you know, it's all yours, it's all for your pleasure, like that. So that's the glories of Maharaj Bali. So some important lesson. Any comments or questions? Krishna Archana.
In this dialogue where Bali Maharaj is responding to Lord Indra from earlier on, there's one thing that's really puzzling me. You've indicated that Bali Maharaj understood that everything requires the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet at the same time, by virtue of the fact that all the arrangements being made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead or Lord Vishnu was in favor of the demigods, and Bali Maharaj indicates or seems to indicate having this understanding that everything is under the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but yet the question remains, is he actually acting having taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through all this encounter with the demons? So it's a question that you know, is there. It definitely presents itself.
Well, there are two personalities among the 12 Mahajans that they side with irreligion, at least externally, in actions. Bali Maharaj and Grandfather Bhishma. And they still consider Mahajans. And so, you know, one question is, okay, Bhishma Dev, he fought against the Pandavas and Krishna, you know, on the sides of Duryodhan and the Kurus. And Bali Maharaj was fighting against the demigods, who are the responsible personalities. You know, like one said that what I was saying, although he's is described as being expert in universal affairs, you know, understanding how the universe works, he was fighting against it because he was knocking out the whole, all the responsible personalities of the universe. And so he was siding on irreligion. So how the explanation of these two personalities is that they performing their duty. That was their duty. In terms of Bhishmadev, he made a vow, and his duty was to always protect whoever was sitting in the throne of Hastinapuri. That was his vow. So he was duty bound to Hastinapur and the king of Hastinapur. So so therefore, because he was bound by duty, he acted in a way that his heart was hurt to do that, but he had no consideration for his personal feelings. He would do his duty. In the terms of Maharaj Bali, his duty was the king of the demons. He was the king of the demons, so he had to benefit the demons. That was his duty. He was to benefit the interests of the demons. However, the principle that he was guiding himself with is this principle, karma dieva dikaraste mapaleshu makachanam, that he will perform his duty, but he was not attached to the result of his duty, because he could understand that was only sanctioned by the Lord. So he had perfect understanding. So he had to perform his duty. He had to make the demons, you know, over the demigods. But because you have an understanding of how that at the end, Krishna will allow or don't allow it, and it was his purpose. You know, Krishna does that. If the demigods were not off, Bali Maharaj wouldn't being able to defeat them. But because the demigods went off, Lord Indra insulted, you know, was so caught in his opulence that he neglected the gesture of a sage, then they wouldn't have any problem. And, you know, they forget. And then Krishna corrects them, and the demons have, you know, have a purpose to help correcting that, you know. So then Lord Vishnu comes to the rescue, and then, you know, they have to take shelter of Lord Vishnu, and they get in line again. So Bali Maharaj was simply performing his duty, but he was not attached. He could understand that the Lord was sanctioning. So that's why he is glorified, you know, as a Mahajan, because such a perfect understanding and such adherence of the duty that was given to him in this lifetime, you know. So that's my understanding of that. You have any thought?
Thank you for the explanation. I find myself thinking then he's one step away from, I mean, with that understanding, from actually performing devotional service, because if the duty's been performed with no attachment to the results, then the next step is to take to the bhakti process, is it not?
Yeah, and that's what the Lord facilitated for him. You know, that's why Lord Bhavana came. So at the end, the personality that is fully glorified in this passing of Lord Bhavana is not the demigods and Indra, it's Bali Maharaj. So, which is, you know, is very wonderful. And you see that how the principle of adhering to one's duties and with a perfect understanding of, you know, being Krishna conscious, and the Lord will reciprocate. So, although what he was doing was not directly because of the circumstances, connecting with the Lord, like the demigods, you know, he's, because his understanding was there, the Lord came and perfectly reciprocated with him. And after the whole pastime, when he fully surrendered, when he came to the position, that position of now he had the opportunity, he's in front of the Lord, he offered everything he has, and still the Lord was asking for more. You know, I took everything you have, but I still need one more thing. And he understood, me. So, you know, you take me. And, you know, that's the glory of Bali Maharaj. He is the personality that exemplifies Atma Nivedana. You give yourself to the Lord. And so that came at the end. It became, you know, everything got exposed to the whole history, the history of the universe, the greatness of Bali Maharaj. Yes, bro.
When Bali Maharaj was performing his duties as king of the demons, was he knowing that performing that duty was pleasing to Lord Vishnu? Like without attachment?
Well, I don't know what to say on that. But one thing that that is in the narration is that he have an understanding that is sanctioned by the Lord. So I'm assuming that there is an arch, you know, that everything was there in him. I mean, being the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, I have Prahlad Maharaj, you know, the super devotee next to you. You know, you have to be. So, you know, it was just there something like a external cover that just needed to be pursed out and then comes. So he had the understanding. Now, the full manifestation of coming to that, like I think the question that Krishna Archana asked, to come to the full exposure of devotional service, devotion to the Lord, came in the pastime with Lord Vamanan. That's my limited understanding to that. But, you know, I mean, it can go really deep with these personalities, you know, I mean, to get to understand their mind, you know. But I think that's what I will say, that it was in the beginning was not fully manifested, and then when it came to that moment that the Lord put his lotus feet on his head, that's when it fully manifested. I think that's the arch. Okay, anything else? Back to Mitch Prabhu.
I'm wondering how it is that even sometimes when the mind experiences a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, the senses still aren't under full control. The mind still won't be under full control and it's still attracted to things outside of Krishna consciousness.
Ask the question again.
I'm wondering, because we were talking about how the mind is the enemy of a conditioned soul, right? When it's under control, it's the best of friends. But sometimes I have an experience that I experience a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, but yet the mind is so flickering that even then that higher taste, that experience of the higher taste, that my senses still aren't under full control, and then the mind still drifts away when I'm chanting, or it still drifts away when it should be focused.
Yeah. I think I told a story of one time that my Guru Maharaj, I was telling him of some experience that I have in Harinam. I was going with Aindra, and then my first sort of almost like religious experience, that it was a moment that it was like something opens. The thing I remember, it was like this sense of like happiness, absorption, and it was like, you know, I lost a moment of being in reality. It was like, I mean, I don't know if my mind is playing trick, but what I remember it was like white out, and it was a moment, but it was amazing. So, and I remember this very clear, the thing, you, and you know, this feeling, and I just went wow, and then when I say wow, puff, the whole thing vanished. So it was a moment of like wow, poof, gone. So you know, it was like I never have that sort of experience. I used to do music and then have some, you know, external, some, you know I don't want to say it in public, but it's embarrassing. But you know, you do what musicians do in general, and you get intoxicated, and then, you know, have some sort of like, but you know what it was, is just being uselessly intoxicated. You get a little more sensitized to whatever, you know, colors and sounds and things like that. But this was different. This was something that I, you know, because it was combined with a sense of happiness and fulfillment, that it was like really quite something. So my Guru Maharaj at that time, he was not my Guru Maharaj, but you know, he was my Guru Maharaj. And he asked me, so how did it go? How was your day? I say, oh shoot, Maharaj, I have this experience. And he says that Krishna just gave you a taste of the experience of the spirit soul, how the spirit soul feels. And then he say, imagine having that 24/7, then you're in the spiritual world. You're, you know, fully realized. That's how the spirit soul is. That's Ananda. That's, so we get this taste, and we got, you know, religious experience, and then we get like, that's just by that, you know, that's what we look, that's the happiness that we're looking, that's what keeps us going, you know. Krishna does that, and he does that in many ways throughout our spiritual life. He manifests himself. Sometimes, you know, we all have reciprocation for the deities, that you get like, wow, like, is this real? You know, it happens actually, and that creates, you know, the relationship and the affection. So, through the process of purification, Krishna does that because he's very kind. He doesn't have to. He just do it out of his mercy. You know, it's not that we deserve it, because our mind, our senses are attached to other things. We're attracted to other things, not to him. But he's, you know, he say, okay, he's sincere. So here we go. Here's, I am, you know, he manifests himself and then withdraws. You go like, oh my God, this is the best. you know. So then that's what keeps us going against the mind. That's what keeps us going, try and go against the current. That's why we do what we do. That's what Srila Sanatana Goswami say, don't go to the banks of the Yamuna with that beautiful blue boy is playing on his flute so nicely, because if you get any contact with this boy, your material life is finished. So our material life is finished, it's spoiled forever. That's the reality. We can, even if we try to go away, you're still with miserable because you can't enjoy materially anymore like you used to when you were completely ignorant. Now, you know, we tried. I had the experience. I tried for 2 years in the beginning of my Krishna consciousness. I was so miserable. I was depressed. I couldn't enjoy anymore like freely like that because I knew something. So I was riddled with guilt. I was unhappy, I was dissatisfied, I was saying, you know, I feel dirty. Karmis don't feel like that. When they do the stuff, they feel like this is the best, this is like heaven, you know. And there, you know, you're trying to forget, you know, and then, you know, you go through the whole thing, and then the next day you feel, you know, depressed, and, you know, I feel dirty, I feel like, you know, bad. Like that guilt, you spoil material life. So that's Krishna's mercy. So because the happiness that we experience with the devotees, you don't find that, you know, when we had this experience with Krishna and the devotees, there's nothing compared to that in the world. And that's something that we never forget. Krishna gives us that. So that's how we get purified. It's not that we're experiencing on our own strength. We're experiencing by Krishna. Krishna is doing it purposely out of mercy to, you know, induce us to go further and further. It's like, you know, he's just leading us, you know, leading us to the right space. He's very kind, Guru and Krishna. All right, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.